morning. My name is Sharon Lambert and I'm part of the standing committee.
Member Martin Zolder.
Morning, good morning, kuya Mori. Kanalang umas sole, masa di ilunggu eli letu jana and alternate member in this committee. So I'm really thinking I'm gonna let you guys.
I'm Jimmy Ferguson, I'm Director for Rural Infrastructure Development in Western Cape.
Morning, Chair. I'm Peter Kutsia from the Department and the Ministry.
Good morning, my name is Rasta Bifed from the Department of the Western Cape.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Ben Maas from the Land Claims Commission, the Western Cape office, and the legal officer there.
Morning, Chair. Abdul Joseph from SAUGA.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Sinead Payne. I'm a journalist at Daily Maverick.
Good morning, I'm Obi Makindi Samuel from PNG.
Good morning, I'm Lemmy Maseko's researcher.
And good morning on behalf of Johan and Wayne.
Morning, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Before we start, I just want to do a little bit of a background. We had the first, members, we had the first contract for the D60, which is on the agenda. And the community members of the D60 came and we had a conversation in here. I felt that today maybe they mustn't be part of this so that we can get the update, because what they wanted really is to get an update about their end game. Specifically that they were complaining that they are older people that are about 84 years and still waiting for the housing, and they don't know whether to put their names on the database for the human settlement or wait for the D66 to really have the housing so that they can have a place to stay. The only thing they want is before they die they should have their houses, or they should have been taken back to the district 6. So hence, I know there was an issue of why the very line of human settlement saying to the land reform and rural development. debate on the issue of the communities out there. They think that when you say housing, whether it's land reform or land distribution, they think that the Western Cape Department of Human Settlement has to give us houses. They don't care, they don't want to give us the houses. And they come to ask for the answers, and we don't have the answers. Hence our intention that let's get the answers on behalf of those communities so that when they call and ask us what is happening, we can be able to give them the answers to their questions. Now that is why we are all here. I invited Minister Maitebogo Mashabane, and the other time she didn't come. This time she sent an apology, that she has a, I have a letter here, she has a cabinet meeting for that she's going to do the presentation on the outcomes in the cabinet. So she's not here, but she did send Mr. Ndali Sadiki and the other colleagues to come and brief us on their behalf. So without wasting any time, before I continue, the city is going to later do a presentation also. Are you alone? Okay, because the District 6, they said for us to get the answers for them, the department has to be here, Human Settlement, the city has to be here, and also the administration, so that we can, the members can also ask the questions where there is really the interlink of something not happening, because in their mind they say somehow it seems that the report that they get from the land reform, it seems like there's no working together from the other spheres of government. So we will just hear where is the problem as we ask the questions. So you are, I'm sorry if you...
I'm not really responsible about this district six. The invitation only refers to the former settlement in the DCG. I'm not sure if the invitation included representation for Minister regarding this.
I do understand that that is the land reform, but even the Department of Human Settlement in the province, they don't have answers about it, but we are trying to find out why is that. We'll ask those questions that they were asking so that we can get the answer. I think it's more of the infrastructure, the special care, the land reform, the special care of why money is taken, all those things. But as we go on, you will be able to, it's not the in-depth information, because the in-depth information will come from the department itself to be able to can answer us. I don't think it will be from the city person.
Okay, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Ekebriu for the presentation. Over to you.
Good morning, Chair and members, and my colleagues. I'm here from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform to present to the committee District 6. So we have prepared two different presentations. One is on the status of the land restitution claim for District 6, and we have another presentation on the status on the housing and the infrastructure for District 6. I've got my colleagues, the Chief and Claims Commissioners accompanying me, who we together with the colleagues will present on the status of the claim. And I also have my colleagues from the infrastructure side, represented by Mr. Nadu, who will do the presentation on the infrastructure status. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Ben Mas will do the presentation, giving the background of the claim itself, so that when we have the discussion on the developing this context. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair. Just a background from the Commission side to the District 6 claim. This claim is obviously the urban flagship of the Commission, and this is quite a big claim. Just a background, the Restitution Act obviously was promulgated to deal with the restitution of land rights, and then upon the enactment of this claim, quite a number of claims were lodged for the District 6 areas. I must just give you just a definition of these claims. The claims actually, you have in terms of section 2, original dispossessed individual within the lodge of claim, and then you would have a deceased estate, the second category. The third one would be descendant of the person who lodged claim, but and then the community. This is just a big background, a bit of a background to this matter. In District 6, quite a number of people lodged claims for dispossession of land rights during the apartheid era. And these people lodged individually as per household, but they clustered their claims together for the ease of settlement and the restoration of right and the return to District 6. So this is the background. Then they are obviously 40, we're talking about 40 hectares available in District 6 for restoration of rights in land. District 6 is just about to the what's the sun side of the CBD in Cape Town. And then there was a tripartite agreement between the city of Cape Town, which is the donor of the land of this 40 hectares, and then the Department of Land and Fair Affairs then, but is now obviously succeeded by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. And we as the Commission have this mandate in terms of the Constitution to settle claims. So claims were lost obviously by the Commission, and the Commission has received these claims. And the third party to this agreement was the Sixth Redevelopment Trust. The trust was appointed to represent the community, the District 6 claims between 2008 and 2013. But I'll give you further perspective of what the trust engagement is currently. Excuse me. Statistical information is that 2,760 claims were lost. Just the next slide. So 2,760 claims were lost. Claims were offered for financial compensations, 1,449. Claims were opted for redevelopment is 1,201. Claims who were allocated dwellings is 139. And just a further breakdown here, we allocated 24 dwellings under pilot phase 1 and under pilot phase 215 dwellings. Currently progress is phase 3 development, and that will consist of 108 dwellings. Claims still awaiting allocation of dwellings is 1,062, and dismissed claims are 110. So this is just a snapshot of the stats pertaining to the statistics. There was a brief opening, Chair, I must just remind you that the cut-off date was 21st December 1998. And we refer to those claims as the old order claims. But there was a brief reopening of the claims process between 2014 and 2016. And and during that period, about 749 people lost claims for the District 6. But the whole process was interdicted by the Lamosa judgment, a constitutional court judgment. Lamosa stands for Landless Movement of South Africa. And they approached the court, the Constitutional Court, complaining about the lack of proper public participation. So they were successful. The process was interdicted. The lodgement between 2014 and 2016 is considered valid. But the amendment to the Restitution Claim Amendment Act was considered invalid because there was no due public participation, especially by the National Council of Churches, National NOCP, National Council of Provinces in the department, and due to the lack of proper public participation, the matter was considered by the court to be invalid. The amendment act. The court ordered all the parliament and obviously the department to go back and focus on the completion of restitution research of outstanding claims. I'm talking about the old order claims, the 1998 claims, and to finalize those claims, and then obviously approach the court again to report to the court again about the progress of these matters. I think the judgment from the 28th, it was given the 28th of July 2016, and the board gave us 2 years to report back. This is the background to the new order claims. Successful claims under the part of phase two mainland chairperson that the trust, the subsidiary development trust, was the appointed project manager for phases one and two. Now, under these two phases, as I mentioned, initially 224 dwellings were completed at the cost of government. We did the state pay for those dwellings, for the development of those dwellings, and 115 of these dwellings were completed in 2013. So there was an allocation process, and the allocation process was primarily on date of lodgement. In plain language, the earlier loss, the sooner you would get a dwelling allocated to you. Obviously on the premise that the research was done by the Commission in terms of our Section 2 and Section Rule 3 and Rule 5 of the Commission's rules, and your claim was found to be compliant. So the sooner the date of lodgement was the primary indicator of when the house should be allocated to you. But then we were approached by quite a number of people in District 6, remember, Chair? These people were dispossessed in the 1960s. And invariably, if they were still alive, they would be at an advanced age. So there were some submissions made to the Minister that we should consider secondary criteria too. And these criteria included old age, I think about the age 90 years and older, poverty-strickenness, and chronic ill health. So a panel was constituted, the allocation panel, to interview applicants in terms of these secondary criteria. So some of the dwellings were then, obviously, and I'm talking about phase two now, the 115 dwellings, some of the dwellings were allocated on that basis to the applicants. So, but then there was an issue with the trust, and the trust for some reason or unbeknown to the department retracted from negotiations after completion of phase two. And the minister, regarded this vacuum not to be very satisfactory for the negotiation process. And then the minister at a public meeting requested the beneficiaries of the six to elect representatives of their choice and to bestow a proper mandate for further negotiations. And at that time, then a reference group, that's a group currently representing the six beneficiaries, reference group was elected at a public meeting through a democratic process. And the reference group now is focusing on phase three redevelopment. The development currently, that's been ongoing currently, but we will give a further explanation regarding phase three development. This six has got various representative groups. I've just referred now. Just referred now to the various groups in District 6. I'm just getting the slide. There are various groups in District 6, and obviously there was historically the District 6 beneficiary in the redevelopment trust. As I've mentioned to you, Chair, honorable members, this entity just withdrew from negotiations because of reasons unbeknown to us, and although they on record stated they might make a comeback, we don't know what that means. And then there is the six community forum. There are 130 beneficiaries with their people under the title. Households who have returned to District 6 and who are currently residing in District 6. So this forum is representing those people currently in District 6 who will be allocated dwellings. And they deal with internal matters like security, policing and so on, and a bit of social integration too. Then there's a District 6 reference group elected and having a proper mandate, and they just received a fresh mandate in 2017, April, represent the interest of District 6 and obviously part of the stakeholders in negotiating the further phasing of development of District 6. They have two work streams. They have the technical team, and in the terms of reference of the technical team is obviously to engage with the holistic development of District 6 and obviously the spatial planning and whatever that might entail through the settlement or further beneficiaries in District 6 and the building of other dwellings and other subsequent phases. And then you have, besides the technical team, you have the social integration team. And this team is tasked, obviously, as the name denotes, about integrating the community, coming back to District 6, and they are also working closely with the District 6 Community Forum and the museum as other stakeholders to have a proper reintegration of the District 6 beneficiaries. Then there is the District 6 Working Committee. Principally, this entity also joined the negotiations a bit later on, but we had an issue with the local standby of this committee because we didn't approve that they represented 1998 or 2014 claimants. They purported initially to represent 2014 claimants, but as I just related to this house and to this committee, those claims have been put on ice, so to speak, and we can't research those claims further until certain conditions have been met, set by the Constitutional Court. This committee is currently, we have submitted a notice of motion taking the minister as first respondent in the matter, the commission second respondent, and the Republic of South Africa, the fifth respondent, sent the notice and asking for a declaratory order in the Land Claims Court. So this matter is pending in court. as you can see from these various groups in District 6, so we have attempted to have what we call a round table with all these representatives to come up with a resolution that there must be one entity representing the District 6 beneficiaries. Some of the these entities were quite willing to negotiate, as especially the working committee, or availed themselves to the court and obviously did not want to pursue that matter further. So I would say there's a contestation about representativity, but there are some groups. And obviously, in terms of the Restitution Act, we must engage with all interested parties in the matter. So these are the various groups. Like I mentioned briefly, then there is the issue of litigation. Chair, we allocated the housing as I have related to yourself and the honorable members. But for reasons unbeknown to us too, some of the beneficiaries didn't take immediate occupation. We had a process in the allocation of housing in that they had signed indemnification forms indemnifying the commission upon the receipt of the key to the house. Now you would know, Chair, if you receive a key, and in fact you have access and the house would be under your control, although you might not be there physically. But four families did not take immediate occupation, and this allowed the opportunity of other people who were disgruntled with the allocation process, who lost very late, say 1998, becoming disgruntled and used unlawful means to gain access to those grants. And we had four matters in court then that when we became aware of people who jumped the queue, so to speak, and by unlawful means gained entry to the dwellings, we engaged in the litigation. Also, Chair, most of these issues came away after 48 hours. As you know, if people invade your dwelling or property, you've got this window period of 48 hours to get these people evicted in the terms of a criminal action, and that's trespassing. You can evict them still under the trespassing. But once 48 hours have been exceeded, and obviously then the matter became civil. So, but in a nutshell then, we got successful eviction orders. One matter went up as far as the Constitutional Court, but we got successful eviction orders against all of these parties. The issue is not that the claims are not compliant, but the issue is that there was an allocation process which was agreed upon by all interested parties, and they decided to use unilateral means to gain entrance, unfortunately, in a criminal matter. The total budget for District 6, the Commission talks about the budget, that's in terms of our Section 42C, and that's funding for development. Our policy is, prevailing policy is, that's 25% of the quantum of the claim. Now, this 42C was ring-fenced, and the amount was $333,354,000. We have obviously expanded the budget in terms of phases 1, 2, and currently phase 3, that's in process. And the remaining funding available for the ensuing phases is $153,105,133.70. This includes the cost to finalize phase 3. So this is inclusive of the current phase. Obviously, like we say, the Commission's mandate extends to the finalization of restitution claims. There's an aspect where other branches of our department have become involved, and then what we would call post-settlement issues. So the funding is available through the budget of the Commission, but ultimately the responsibility and would rest on the other branches of the department to oversee the drafting of a holistic plan, development plan that's in process too far, much progress has been made, and for the implementation of the ensuing phases. Again, we can just state for the record here, 108 dwellings under instruction, that there was an intervention there because of non-performance by the development. The building contractor failed the construction, and there was a mutual agreement to terminate the contract because of a lack of performance and material breaches of the contract. But I think our other colleagues may expand on that matter. So, so this contract is now terminated currently, and the process will be undertaken for the final completion by going on the supply chain route and inviting tenders to complete the phase 3. But as I've mentioned to you, our obligation will stop at the allocation of dwellings and the finalization of claims, and ultimately the transfer of those dwellings into the name of the beneficiaries. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Member, I don't know, are we going to, is there another presentation that is going to run? Are we going to take all the presentation and ask questions, or is presentation after? How are we rolling out?
Actually, I really have a problem with your suggestion. I see where you are leaning towards. But there are some pertinent questions on the specifics here. So one does not want to lose track. If you don't mind.
I think, members, if you can just indulge me, because I suspect that because that is the Commission and then we want to hear from the land reform, if they can also do the presentation so that you can, maybe some of the answers you'll find that they do the presentation from the land reform. Thank you. Over to you. Do you have that presentation?
Yes.
is the background regarding the claim. I think most of this information was presented by Ben. I think the pertinent things regarding the redevelopment is the appointment of the District 6 Development Trust initially as the developer on behalf of the claimants, and their involvement in the construction of the first two pilot phases. They were independent. The first two pilot phases consisted of 24 units and 115 units, and were completed in December 2012. Next slide, please. The development was championed by a company called Target Projects, who drafted a business plan. The business plan is premised on the inclusion of 5,000 residential units in District 6 on 40 hectares, and it was based on a cross-subsidization model where you have money coming in not just from restitution but also from private housing, from land reform and retail. This was the basis of which they commenced construction of the first two phases, and I think that's important because it also is the reason that the standard of housing was of the quality of it was, not the standard that we normally accept for government sponsored housing. After the construction of the first two phases, there was a lot of unrest within the claimant community that led to the then minister asking to meet the claimants to speak to the issues that they had with their representation at the time, which was the trust. Move the next slide, please. The minister met with the claimants in 2012, where there was a large sort of overriding dissatisfaction leveled against the trust as the representative body. I think the largest thing was that they felt the trust wasn't fully representing them, they hadn't been elected. The minister then asked for a process where elected representation could be convened, and that led to the convening of the reference group, which Ben spoke about. There's two streams there, there's the technical and there's the working social integration group. We then had these elected members of the community that we worked with and have been working with ever since. There was also an intergovernmental task team set up that had representation from the department, provincial government. This is this committee. Ms. Lorraine Plasky from the Premier's office represents the province in that forum. We also have the city represented in the forum. At the high level, there was a steering committee set up between the minister, the premier, and the mayor that had given the outlook that they would oversee the development process. I think what was identified was that the business planning process, which Target had envisioned would cause the cross-subsidization, was being delayed because there wasn't the agreements in place for the businesses to then create the cross-subsidization to commence with the construction. The minister then intervened to say that we should separate at that point business planning from the restitution process and us as the department take the responsibility of ensuring accelerated restitution. It was through these dialogues that it was agreed that the department would be in the best position to act as developer for the next phase because in the interim, while all of this was happening, there wasn't any work being done on site. And the claimants, as you alluded to, felt that there were too many older claimants dying and we should be commencing with construction. So the department took on the role of developer. Go to the next slide. This is the institutional arrangement that I've alluded to regarding the task team at the top, which is political heads, then the intergovernmental steering committee, which is representation from provincial, national, and the city, and also the representation then from the claimant community, as well as a technical subcommittee that we set up with officials regarding the actual commencement of construction. This was also from the city, the department, the consultants that were appointed, representation from also the claimants, because they wanted it to be a transparent process. Next slide, please. I think there were many workshops that we've taken place that I want to put on record, because it has an impact on the process and also the progress. When we took over this project, there was a lot of dissatisfaction about the physical structure or the actual approach that was undertaken in the initial phases undertaken by the trust. Claimants felt that this type of housing wasn't representative of what they believed District 6 stood for. They had a very large problem with the houses being white, they're not colorful enough, things like that there. So we had to engage with them in a process of consultation and a participatory design approach before we commenced with construction, so that we could design something that they would be happy with and support. What's the next slide, please? We had workshops. I think this is the list of all of the principles that were adopted at the first workshop that was held in December 2012 at the District 6 Museum, where we had consultants and experts from heritage, from spatial planning, discussing with the claimants the different aspirations and needs for this development. And these were the principles that were agreed upon. You'll see them manifest in the architectural designs that we'll look at further on in the presentation. This is a list of all the processes that I'm alluding to. I think what you can see there is that there's a long, very long process regarding planning for District 6. It was started in 2006 with the development framework that was undertaken. The development framework was adopted in 2012, endorsed by the City of Cape Town. That's still primarily the framework which would then be working. There's also been several workshops and public participation exercises held with the larger community regarding this. There's also issues of heritage that are very pertinent to District 6. The framework, for instance, alludes to the fact that District 6 original street network of streets will have to be reinstated. There are a lot of issues that actually have an impact also on cost. One has to understand that the original District 6 was bulldozed over completely and then left for a period of 30 years. The heritage requirement is that we are very sensitive when we under-earth that. So it's not just a normal construction site where we can bulldoze whatever we want and start with building. We have to have a heritage practitioner on site while we're doing our earthworks, who has to then separate all of the waste of the day and find if there's anything of value. It's a long, arduous process that we've had to endure. And these also lead to some of the longer processes in terms of construction that would not be associated normally with a normal development of this kind. Next slide. These are just some pictures of some of the workshop and engagements. The first workshop that we spoke about, where we took the claimants around to see the pilot phases, I think what we realized at that juncture was that a lot of their dissatisfaction was based on perception that many of them had not actually been through these houses themselves. That they had preconceived ideas based on, you know, their own discussions. It wasn't as bad as they had initially hoped for, but we took on board many of their suggestions about how it should change. I think what we realized is there was great apprehension regarding flexibility and their inability to be able to adapt their houses over the long term. They felt that the houses were too small for the size of family units that they are, and there was concern about that. But we've adapted ways of dealing with that. Following that workshop, you can see 3 months later, we developed designs that we presented to the larger claimant community at a meeting in the ICC. At this meeting, again, all political principles were present, where we presented the architectural concepts for the next phase that we were going to take responsibility of. We had models, we had the architects present,
And this adhered to all of the issues that they raised with us at the workshops and consultation sessions. So you can go through and respond. These are some images of that session. You can see our political presence and the claimant presence at that meeting, where it was adopted that we should proceed. Sorry, these are images of a subsequent claimant meeting held on the site where CPUT formally donated the land. Sorry, I should have reiterated that. You'll see in further picture, the land in question is the land adjacent to CPUT. It's the largest single portion of land, open land, and the reason we chose it is because it had in place the correct land use, and it also offered us the largest yield in a single phase. District 6 has got about 36 hectares of land, all in small urban. Each one has a different land use. Each one has to be rezoned accordingly. So we took the path of least resistance, so to speak, to try and accelerate the next phase. But the land in question currently is owned by CPUT and the Department of Higher Education. It was formally donated in this event to the land claimant. This was a start turning ceremony held in 2014 prior to the commencement of this phase. With regards to the phases, you can see the first phase was the bulk earthworks. The reason that was separated was Heritage had made the requirement that all of the earthwork had to be done in a heritage-sensitive manner, so that was deemed a separate project. We did that initially because it was something we had to do quite rapidly. We thought it's quicker way to get around. We're currently at site on phase 3B, which is the top structures, and 108 units. That is an aerial photograph that illustrates site Q2 that we're currently constructing on. I think you'll see the left of that image is CPUT. QMP is a single urban that was donated. It used to be the sports field for CPUT. But if you overlay that with the original street network, there were hundreds of little streets and alleys in that area in the original district system that we're trying to reinstate the main ones to. This is just a 3D sonometric of what the development looks like and how the configuration of different types of housing in that area works. Basically what we have is internal rows of row houses. The claimants all had a preference for these types of houses, although the density of this is quite low and we don't have adequate land to provide this for all claimants, we did include as many of them as we could. And then on the periphery of that we have apartment blocks. Right at the bottom of that image you'll see a street that is what we call New Hanover Street, which is the main arterial route back into the city. That would have mixed use consisting of retail at the ground floor and apartments above it. This all is in keeping with the preferences of the city and included in the development plan or the development framework. This is the row house typology. This is what it's based on. You see it has a heritage link to the original typologies within District 6. It's a split level unit that adheres to the topography of the site. The architectural intent tried to include a level of flexibility. What we wanted to encourage is that we couldn't provide everything that the claimants wanted, but what we could do was create a model that they could add to over the long term. So that was the intention of this design. It allowed for the addition of additional bathrooms and bedrooms over time. And I think that was something that the claimants sort of insisted on, that they didn't want something that was fixed forever because it didn't fix with their mix, with their family size and things. So we had a system called, I think it was called PEAS, was provide, enable, adapt and sustain. This is just an architectural
the Lean Stated Street would look like where the row houses was. These streets were actually the original District 16 streets, or they aligned on the original District 16. There's also the need for apartments because of the density requirements. These apartments are fairly generous by modern development standards. They're 90 square meters with 115 including the balcony. The balcony can also be partitioned off to create an internal space. That was the flexibility that we spoke about. There was a lot of consultation with the claimant with regard to these apartments. They should be said have a very they don't really prefer apartments because they feel as if we're reinstating what happened to them originally when they were taken out of District 6 and put into the Cape flats. We have to show them that they're not the same standard. This is the typologies that we currently have in Phase 3. We originally had ground plus 3, but the claimants for the reference group at the time refused to have more than 2 floors above. These units were put together so that they all have accessible ground floors. The issue of catering for the elderly was something that we adhered to in this very carefully. There's ramps, all of the ground floor units are accessible for wheelchairs, and the understanding was that all ground floor units on this current phase would be for the use of elderly claimants. This is just some of the processes that we're undertaking to get that phase on off the ground. I'm sure as a committee regarding human settlements, you're familiar with all the mandatory processes regarding environmental and other planning and heritage issues. That's a list of all of the things that we still, even though we're the state, have to adhere to all the regulations. We did this in a forum where we did, however, have the participation of the City of Cape Town through the steering committee, and we did receive a lot of support in getting some of these mandatory requirements done in a fairly quicker manner. This is some details regarding that phase. It was commenced in July 2015. It was awarded to Fikile Construction. The contract amount was 167 million. My colleague Jimmy will be able to answer questions regarding this construction phase as his unit oversees the management of the actual construction project. But I think what the overall issue is that Fikile Construction as a construction company hasn't been able to produce the type of efficiency and quality that we require on this project. The project has been marked by many delays regarding quality issues, and Fikile currently the department has terminated its contract with Fikile and in the midst of doing a reassessment before appointing a new contractor to finish the works. These are some images of where that current phase currently resides, the internal finishes. We have more pictures, but I'm sure if you pass it, you will be familiar with that construction. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to start with the last presentation from the gentleman at the back. Just as a side note, you know, it took us so quick to build World Cup Stadium and with the hard terrain, yet we're taking years and years and years to build what looked like only a few hundred houses. And you said somebody is here to answer the question on Kile construction, I'm keen to know what has happened. Using the presentation and the information that you provided us, that's this, the contract amount, 167 million rand, 4.3, I just want to confirm that that was for the 108 units only. Is that correct? Yes, just because I'm asking for a question, say.
It is for the 108 units, but you must also say we're the full developer, so it's not just in normal circumstances. Maybe there'll be other contributors to the infrastructure, such as the streets, the electrical infrastructure.
But from your cost, that 167 was for 108 units.
108, but also inclusive of all the infrastructure, the bulk
infrastructure, etc.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not just the top structure.
And during the contract period, I mean, Sikile started in 2015. We're now 2018. When did it come to light in the construction period that Sikile was not going to deliver? Because I presume you have a quarterly meeting, a monthly meeting, there's a project manager on site. When did it happen, and why didn't anybody at that stage look into it to avoid that we are here today? And the fact that there's 1,000, based on the presentation from the other gentleman and earlier, 1,200 individuals opted for redevelopment, less than 108, bring to 1,039 individuals or families, whatever you want to call them. When can they expect construction to start taking place for them? And where is the funding coming from? Because using your numbers, the 108 units comes to 1.5 million per unit, including obviously bath work infrastructure. And that 1,039 comes to 1.6 billion rand. So I want to know where is the funding going to come from and how long is the project going to take? Because people are rightfully frustrated. It's taken so many years for them to get back on land that was approved donkey years ago. And I'm excluding the additional individuals that came through after the case with the La Rosa judgment. And then, Chairperson, I'm going to come to the the gentleman there in the presentation on there. That's just going to on the various interest groups that you've mentioned, the District 6 Beneficiary Trust, the District 6 Community Forum, the Reference Group, the District 6 Working Committee, etc. Is there the cross-pollination? Is there different individuals that sit on the same committee? And can we get a list of those individuals? And if you verify that those individuals on those committees are actually part of District 6 in some way or the other, whether their mother stay there, their father stay there. And the reason I'm asking you is my constituents, we just played, we just had the Woodlands riots there, and only to find out a lot of people that was involved, they actually don't even stay in Mitchell School. So I'm just keen to know, in terms of your verification process, where are these individuals come from, and have they been reference checked to ensure they're actually part of this process in some way or another? And you mentioned that there was discussions about bringing some of them on board as one team. And how far is that, and do you foresee that it can still happen? And then with regard, coming back to Sikile for building construction again, is there going to be punitive measures in place for them, because this project has now been delayed, and now that you know that they're not there anymore, they can't deliver, has there been a consideration to fast track appointing another contractor or supplier or subcontractor to ensure that this takes place rather sooner than later to avoid people taking to the streets? And then I'm just curious that then the dismissed claims of 110, was that from the Commissioner for Land Restitution? And on what basis were some of these claims dismissed? Do the people genuinely not from that area? I'm going to wrap up now.
Go on.
Let me just get to do this quickly.
Okay.
And
then the remaining funding that you talk about, you said the total budget for District 6 was 333 million, and the remaining funding available for restitution is 153 million. Is that the total budget left to finalize District 6, including the other 1,201, or let's say less than 108, or which is 1,039, and where are you going to get additional funding to make sure that the District 6 gets completed as soon as, well, in fact, as soon as reasonably possible, because some people are dying already, some have passed away. Yes, Chair, just leave it to that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know which question you did not ask. Let me pick up on the ones that are left. Chair, I think, firstly, let me appreciate the opportunity, because today, incidentally and coincidentally, is that we celebrate 105 years since the adoption of the Restitution Act of 1913. So that brings a historic moment. And I think the beauty of this, despite the challenges, you can hear that there's some work that is being done. Perhaps the battle on our side, we don't get to interact with the commission as often. So when you don't, you'll say, hey, they're doing nothing. And I think that is because we don't interact often. My worry, though, in terms of the specifics of this claim is that you've got a high number of people who opt for cash instead of achieving the restitution and the redistribution exercise. And then it further puts a strain on the recourse and the whole exercise of reconciliation, redress, because then you end up having this the settlement not achieving the intended objective. I mean, 52.5% of claimants say they want money. And I know that some of the claimants, when they come in, even if they say they want land, afterwards they sell it privately. If you give a person 1.5% home, for instance, and they are unemployed, I mean, you can tell me what's going to happen to that house. So I think we need a creative approach that will be more integrated in terms of responding to the social challenges. It's a very complex exercise. And I'm sure there are answers on that side. I'm throwing this to the department so that we'll see how best to deal with this. I'm particularly disturbed by Figile Construction. That if you look at the grade, this is one of the giants of the industry, 9 GB, you know, and it seems it's a very established company looking at the grading. You know, it's a holistic grading. But how could they, at that level, it's like saying to a person that is writing a grade 12 metric certificate, you take that person to write a grade 7, and they fail the exam. The question is, how did you get to a grade 12? And that is the reality that we're confronted with. And it smells fish. That's what I'm telling you. That's what I'm saying. I would love to know who are the directors of this company, how they related to some people in the appointment processes. Because the reality is, it seems like these are friends of friends that have been given a job without being competent enough. I know it's a serious allegation there. But this is a serious problem, because it discourages. You can see this, I'm assuming that this is a black contract. And it says that if you're black, you're not competent enough, even if you are big. We see the big captains of industries that are mainly white, they deliver services, and they deliver at a quality service, at a quality level. And this then casts aspersions on the many that need to be promoted as well, so that we can grow the scale, the slice among the contractors that are historically disadvantaged. I don't like this. It puts a bad taste. It leaves a bad taste to such a restorative project. Are you going to take any serious decision, serious action, and go to court to have some recourse on this matter? Because money has been lost. So you can't simply sit back and say, we are here. Are you going to take measures to get what is lost as part of this project? And how much real loss, despite the money that has been spent, how much real loss? What is the quality? Are there any units that have been completed that you would say claimants would be able to occupy them without having to fix this? Where was the project manager? I think they will not remember us. At what stage did you realize there was a problem? So the next question is pertaining to the numbers. They said that it's 108, and obviously there are other units there are other units that are part of this project. I just need to understand the total development budget. Do you think this is enough? Or do you think you're going to need more money, and how much do you think you need still, given the escalation of cost? I mean, we see that the interest rate is going high, and the rent is dropping, and the economy is contracting. In the first quarter, it was 2.2% dip. So the reality is, do you think you're going to need more money than the one that you anticipated?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I want to welcome the different departments and the Commission and the Commissioner for this report. Because our last meeting report, because of article in the media about District 6, and people of District 6 were here. So my concern firstly is, Chairperson, who were those people of District 6? If we hear now in this presentation that there's different people representing District 6, that's my first question. Why I'm saying I'm welcoming this report is especially on that thing of the different representation on District 6, because the briefing that we receive from those people are different from what we are receiving here today. The first thing I wanted to say is, especially in your presentation you are mentioning, that I think the claimants and the department mentioned that there is a political head in your structure. There's a political head casting, and part of that political head is the premier, the minister, and the mayor. So it means that all three spheres of government is involved here. And that was not the case when I asked that question to that commode, the people that was here. They didn't mention that, but my question to you is now, if they are part the political head, and if you have the structure, are you having quarterly meetings, monthly meetings? Is there any reports on what your meeting was about, and what was the outcomes of your meetings? And then my other, I'm first going to do the department and chairperson, and then I will go to the commission. And then my other question to you is, who are you meeting with of the different representatives of the District 6? Who is the structure? Because you said in your IGDSC there is beneficiaries of the District 6. Who are these committees is part of that structure? And then my other question, I'm going to do all my questions first on that. You said there's been plans and 3D models were presented to the broader claimant community. This claimant here said to us that some of the people, beneficiaries, have died already, and up till now they don't have houses, and they were staying there for years, and they are still involved. So my question to you is, these people that received the houses so far, were they claimants of, I believe they were claimants of the first claim, and not of the claim that came after in 2012 or 2016, they were of the first claimants. So I want to know, were they old people, because the people that was here said that they are old, they are over 80s and 60s and they didn't get houses. So were those people that you first gave the houses, were they part of the first claimants? And I want to know what was the, if you have that, and if you don't have it, you can send it to me in writing, what was the age group of the people that got their houses? And then my other question to you is, I see there was a lot of public participation on, in your report, but why did then a certain group went to court? If there was all these public participations took place, were they not part of the public participation, or were they part but they preferred when there was a deadlock to go to court? And then my other question is to the now to the money that was spent on the company. I know you said I know infrastructure, but infrastructure is very costly. And that takes the majority of the money of construction. But the grading of this company, Sikile, is very high. But I also know that in construction, when it comes to the building of the houses, they use subcontractors. So maybe I'm not making an excuse for them. Maybe that was the case, I don't know. But I really want to know, like the other members said, why didn't the department pick it up earlier? Or why did Knight at first, did they do good work at first, but then the other work of them was not quality? Just give us an explanation. Then now I want to come to the commission. Your page, your trust, you said the trust withdrew after pilot phase 1 and 2. I want to know, why did they, is there any reason why they withdrew after those phase, because in the beginning they were said to be the project managers, if I'm correct. They were used at the beginning, so why did they withdraw if there was such a good relationship between you and them? And then I want to come to your status of old claimants and lodges. The total of claimants is 2,760. 1,201 opted for the redevelopment. They wanted to go back to their land, if I'm correct. And now I want to know, if 1,201 went back, it means then, as the commission, you budget for them to go back. So they, I want to know, is there money, because up to now you only did 139. So is there money for the rest of them to go back?
Another question. So far you are on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah,
can I, you will ask the other holding.
Okay.
Let me ask the member Dijana and you'll come back again to ask another one. Member Dijana.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to welcome the presentation. My first question is on the commission on the litigation in District 6 and the approved budget. Mine is on the unoccupied units. I want to know how many were those units. And hence the department is talking about public participation. What were they discussing with the beneficiaries if they are unoccupied units? What have they discussed with them? Because now I understand that when there is a public participation, that means there are reports. Those beneficiaries were reported to say that we, the units are there and these people must occupy those units. How are they operating? I need that. And then my second question is again on the status of old claims. It's also the commission. It's talking about the 110 dismissed claims. Now my question is on the reasons for that dismissal. What were the reasons? And have they communicated those dismissed claims with the beneficiaries which are affected? That's my second question. My third question, I just need to clarify. On the letter of the appointment, the department is saying that date of letter of termination is 22nd March 2018. The letter of appointment was 28 June 2015, commenced in May 2016. What was the delay? I just need to clarify because there's something which I don't understand. I think my question is aligned with the one of Member Marcel who's talking about the friendship or whatever. Because as I'm sitting also here, I've got lots of questions about this Fikile construction. because now it was set 28 July 2015 appointment date, but the comment was on May 2016 for a long time. Why? Those months. And I wanted to know, was particular construction being paid on those months now, from August up to April 2016? And then my other question is on the 17th November 2017, the department terminated the contract on the 17th November 2017, but Ubusikile has received the letter. The letter of the termination was on the 22nd March 2018. Again, it's another loophole. I just need clarity on this, month and date, because for me it's another thing. And I want to know, from November 2017, when the department was concluding that 17th November 2017, Ufikile has been terminated, and then the letter, the letter of termination was written on the 22nd March 2018, 4 months, I was counting now, it was 4 months. Was the department still paying Ufikile construction for those months? Because I understand, if I don't have a letter of termination, I'm waiting for my money. Now I just wanted to know. It's also aligned with the budget, which Umema was asking. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I will ask the questions after the first round, but while you answer the questions, I just want to find out from the slide of the public participation you gave me. The first intervention was 2006, same slide. And from that, that means that's where you, the total claims that were lodged of 2,760, of which on the other presentation is vice versa. I think maybe the typing error, because on another one is 2,760, on the other one is 2,670. I'm going to take it as a typing error on both. But I just want to find out, when you are saying public participation for all those days from the department versus the commission, you are saying that we have this claim. Who was participating from the groups that they cropped up as that was happening? Because from the department side, there's been public participation first March, July, December, it goes on until 2018, from 2006. And from the presentation of the commission, we do have different stakeholder, the District 6 Beneficiary Development, District 6 Community Forum. So this public participation, whom was it involving? Who are the people that were coming for that public participation? Are there any claimants that are not part of these groups that crop up as the years go by? And who's representing District 6 as we speak now from the commission side? Whom are you sitting with? Or you are not sitting with them, you have de-rolled to give the department the responsibility of communicating with their claimants there. I'll ask some other questions. I don't know who's going to start taking the commission. Let's start with you first, and then we'll take it from there. Right.
Thank you very much, Chair, for all these questions and members. I don't know whether I must ask to begin with your questions first and go work backwards. With your permission. Chair, yes, the public participation, I think our colleagues were referred to, you must just understand the structure of the department. There are various structures and branches, we call it. We have different mandates and core businesses. The commission operates in terms of the Restitution of Land Rights Act, 22 of 1994 was amended. So public participation they are referring to, I can respectfully say that refers to the development process of this. It's a holistic plan for development. If we talk about participation, that was for the allocation of dwellings in this district, you know, settlement of the land claims.
Excuse me. Before you continue, I do understand that. For those processes, for those two departments, the core business is for the land claim. So the interaction is of about the information between the departments. I don't want the specific, I was not expecting the answer to be on the process itself. It's the exchange of the information for the process that I'm interested in. Public participation, even if it happens, that information comes to you to tell you what is happening. So it's more of give us the information of as these groups they crop up that you do have information. Whom were they talking to, and then the information that you were getting, and then for you to make a decision, an informed decision, you have to also depend on the information that you get from the department itself. So it's not about the explanation of who's responsible for what. We just want to know the information about the District 6 and try to find out how long and how are we going to move forward to make sure that really gets dealt with eventually.
Thank you very much. Perhaps I should say that generally the Commission works closely with the Department in settling this claim. I think that the issues are that it is a very complex matter in the sense that, as you've seen in the presentation, you've got various interest groups and they each bring their own perspective of what they want. You will see from the responses that the reason that it's taking this long, even the consultation process, is the failure to get to an agreement with the claimants themselves in terms of what they think they are entitled to, in terms of restitution, to what is possible, to a question of what land is available for restitution, and also you've got a grouping who at a certain point in time were about people who did not lodge a claim. That was even before the reopening of 2014. So you had a group that were concerned that they were being excluded from the process. And from our perspective, legally, we had to exclude them because they hadn't lodged a claim. So even as they bang and help and define the various groupings, you have a group of the claimants, the old order, you have a group of those who had not lodged claims then, who now have lodged claims during the 2014 reopening, which was interdicted. And remember, we are not able to settle those claims in 2014 once the new order was. And then you've got other interests of people who are not necessarily claimants, but have broader interests around the issues of District 6. And then you have the trust also, which was the initial structure which was set up to develop, but they also had their own type of initiative that they wanted to pursue, which was bought into by some of the members and not others. And so the consultation took this long because of that, because you agree in 1 week, and then you have to go back, and for the next month you say the same thing over and over again because there is no agreement on what it is that you want to move forward with. But I will let Ben continue with the responses, except just to say that District 6 is not your normal claim in the context of a restitution claim where you identify a land that was taken and you restore. This has a development aspect in it, and the development is on land that is not big enough for all of the claimants. So Kelvin and team were trying very hard to ensure that the development opportunity is inclusive, because you've got, for example, owners at the time of dispossession, and you've got tenants as well. So you have to take into consideration all of those. Some owners are saying that they should have a separate type of right versus people who are tenants. Some owners owned more than one property. And so it's a variety of issues. But I'll continue to chip in if Chair will allow me as and when it's necessary. Please proceed.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So I can go to the other questions, perhaps. There's a question by the, sorry for pointing out the lady in yellow. The question about the article in the media and who those people were. We must just say we are negotiating with the District 6 forum. We are negotiating with the group.
that we think has got the mandate of the people. We sourced the new mandate in 2017. So there are quite a number of people making statements in the press, but we think there's an official platform. I must just say there's a technical team steering committee comprising of the whole of the department. We don't see ourselves as two different departments. We're part of the one department, but our core business might differ in certain aspects. So we have this technical committee meeting fortnightly, every 2 weeks, coming together to discuss, and these are senior officials of the department having this platform to discuss development aspects and even the litigation issue. So there is a collective engagement here pertaining to the development of District 6. The issue of the, and then as been alluded by my colleague Calvin, there is also the political forum comprising of the three tiers of government, Premier, Province, and obviously National Government. But that's a separate forum that we sometimes account to. But bi-weekly engagement is with all the officials of the department. And obviously then there are bilaterals with the representatives of the beneficiaries. So there's a consultative approach and an engagement approach with all the stakeholders. The issue of the public participation, which resulted in the lack thereof, which resulted in the Lamosa judgment, I think the judgment is a matter of record, but as the court is pronounced, it's not the department, because we had a rollout of engagement with all communities and stakeholders in civil society leading up to the amendment of the Act. So I think the court singled out the National Council of Provinces for their election of duty, but not participating in conformity with our national constitution. And hence the judgment that you can, the claims to report in the new order claims we refer to are validly lodged, but you cannot touch it until the amendment effected is subject to a proper public participation of all role players and stakeholders in society. Then the other issue, the withdrawal of the trust, the District 6 redevelopment trust, they were part of the tripartite agreement initially with the department and the city of Cape Town. But why they withdrew, I don't know, there's a lot of speculation, Chair, and I think maybe not. From their side, they just retracted from negotiations. I think there was one issue that they contributed apparently to the phase one development, but that was never resolved. They couldn't provide us with the paperwork for the involvement in phase one, but they just retracted and they stayed to come back at second stage. So then the issue about 1,201 beneficiaries and our wise only 1,201 opting for development. There are options available in the Restitution Act. You might just in summary say these options available are restoration, meaning going back to the place where you were dispossessed from, restoration of rightful land, alternative land if it's not feasible to go back to the very land you were taken from by the party government, and the third one would be financial compensation. So the express preferred is a democratic right of these people, constitutional right actually, to express their preferred restitution option. And there might be seemingly an imbalance between people wanting to go back to the District 6 and people opting for financial compensation. And then there were further questions, Chair, about the why the litigation issue asked by the member, the litigation. Why did the litigation, why was there litigation for the unoccupied units? We had a process of allocating those units. The minister had a public meeting, our former minister, with all these beneficiaries. And on the receipt of the key to the house, they had to sign indemnification clauses, indemnifying the commission, you know, once they received the house and gained possession. The issue was that four people did not move in. Once the keys, the understanding was once you receive your keys, you would either move in personally or you will make suitable arrangement for the dwelling to be occupied. Remember at that time there was an issue of the Khorasan movement going around and contesting that the space in the districts, it should be long to the First Nation. There was this political, that's a backdrop to political issues. And we asked, we had various meetings, one-on-one meetings with the beneficiaries, and we requested them, once you receive the house, immediately occupy the house, move in, that people can see you are physically in the dwelling. Four people did not, and hence that resulted in the unlawful occupation by claimants. These were other claimants, but they were not, they didn't qualify in terms of the qualification of allocation of the dwellings. Like we said, this first lodgement, Dayton lodgement, that was the first criterion, and they were, the second criteria was subcategories were old age, health infirmities or chronic illness, and poverty stateless. So they didn't comply. There was proper process of allocation. We had a panel constituted with the claimant beneficiaries, the representatives, and the commission. And obviously the minister had to sign that off too. So they did not comply, this left the dwellings vulnerable to, you know, unlawful occupation initially. I can't comment maybe on the Fikili issue, we've got our colleagues that would comment on the termination and so on, or the contract and time frames. I don't know whether I've responded to all the issues raised by the members.
Dismissed, Kenneth. Dismissed.
Okay, yes, thank you, Commissioner. Dismissed claims, we have a process in terms of our Section 2 there. once I'm talking about the Old Order Act, Old Order claimants. Claims should have been lodged by 31st December 1998. That was the cut-off date. If you missed that cut-off date, your claim would be what we call invalid, or better word, in legal law, not compliant. So the dismissed claims, most of these claims were lost in time. You know, before the 1998 cut-off date, 31st December. But then you have to prove that you, and the onus of proof would be on the claimant, that you were dispossessed in terms of a racial discriminatory act or practice. One of these two things, a discriminatory act or practice. We've discovered that some people left District 6 way before the promulgation of the Group Areas Act. That was the instrument of dispossession. So they left voluntarily. Now the Act prescribes, the prescript is quite clear, it must have been a racial act that led to the dispossession. So these are two of the main categories of why the claims were dispossessed. Obviously we submitted letters to them, there was an engagement. You know, there's an out-of-part-time rule, you can't just dismiss it, you must allow the other people to respond. We put it before, there was an exchange of communication with the affected people, claimants, and we informed them timely. And then we had to write the letter, because the commission is only the regional land claims commissioner who is vested with that authority to officially dismiss a claim. So we had to engage the people, there was communication, an open line of communication with the affected claimants, and then we made the submission to our regional land claims commissioner on the probator value of the claim, or rather prima facie, on the face value of the claim, this claim is non-compliant. There are other categories for dismissal, that's a frivolous claim. We had one person claiming the whole of South Africa. That's a frivolous claim, and then there's a category of vexatious claim too, where which also can invite a dismissal. But in a nutshell, it's only the regional land claims commissioner who can dismiss. We do just the recommendations. Thank you.
The question on the groups is
there? And a question on the various concerned groups you didn't answer.
Thank you for that. The question of the various concerned groups, and that's actually a bit of a problem for the Commission. If you deal with one organization, obviously it would be much better for ultimate rollout of development and other negotiation aspects. I don't know, there was an issue with the working group, who's taken us to court now. This is a matter subject to litigation. that they initially only represented the new order claimants. Now, as our commissioner said, Chief Electronics Commissioner said, we cannot touch the research. Although we are the locks, we are well interdicted from researching those claims. So they came with that apparent mandate that they are representing the new order claimants. But then there is a smattering of small number of old order claimants they apparently represent too. There is, I would say, a contestation here between the officially recognized representative body and themselves about at the working group who should then take the space to engage with the minister. Remember, there was a trust initially, but the trust by nature is not a democratic entity. And the claimants became very concerned about certain aspects apparently of development of the redevelopment program with the trust, and they were making decisions without proper consultation. They felt that the trust was not a democratic organ to assist in the development. So they became disenchanted with the trust and the operations of the trust. Then, obviously, the minister, when the trust retracted, the minister saw maybe the time it would be best served if they engaged with democratically elected people. So the minister called to meeting. We had a meeting at the CTICC with the whole of almost all the beneficiaries were invited. We got a database of almost all, almost 99.9% perfect, who we can invite and who would be eligible beneficiaries. So the minister invited, our previous minister invited all these people, and then we held a meeting, a public meeting. And it was an open process. We were there almost for the whole day. And there was a proper election of the representatives now, of the representatives of the entity that represents now the community. So there is not the issue is that we deal with them. But the other groupings, groupings that surface now and then, you know, the community group in the District 6, they are engaging with community-specific issues. But at the Commission's viewpoint is we must engage with all and everybody and not be exclusive. And hence, there's a process that we must talk to them, everybody, all these groupings.
Thank you, Chair. Can I respond?
Yeah, Chair, I think the question relates to my earlier question. My statement that I made was that 52.5% of people in this specific project opted for money. That question was pregnant, by the way. What I needed to further expand on is that there's a general a process where nationally the majority asked for money instead of the rent that they were dispossessing. And the figure is staggering. It could be in the range of 80 to 90%. But the department can dispute that. Because I'm begging a question to get some answers, whether what is it that presses people to go for that? What are the mitigating factors that make people not to go for what they were originally supposed to be going for? And it is not whether it's a right or not a right. I think it should not be seen as whether it is a right or not a right. But I just want to understand what causes that. Then the last question, Chair, is in the Western Cape, how many outstanding claims that needs to be finalized?
It's not all questions that have been answered. It was the commissioner was attending to those ones. So we still have to get the answers for the other questions. So I've asked Umama to continue because he still answered the same question, member. That is why he will go back to revert to the other question that he didn't answer. So it's just a continuation.
So the commissioner is expressing their view. Because I didn't want to throw questions out of the window.
Yeah.
Because of feelings and matters.
Yeah, no,
I don't want to bring feelings to this.
I
stating serious issues.
I acknowledge that, member. Let's get the answers and then we'll get the view and the reality of the answers, of which one is the personal view and which are the real answers. But mind the time. So, you know, we are in this space until what time? So, members, if you can make sure that you don't do the statement, do the question so that we can have answers. The introductory statement, cut them out, please. Thank you.
And also, the commissioner, please answer the question, not the story behind the answer.
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to say that in the context of where the claimant communities take financial compensation versus land, yes, we see in some provinces that they focus on financial compensation. For example, in the Eastern Cape, it's rural land. You find that they opt financial compensation because they get moved from one rural area to another. So they will say that they already occupy land and they are more interested in financial compensation in that context. But a lot of urban tenancy claims also financial compensation. Some claimants, when you ask them, they say that they have more pressing needs. So it's about poverty and they would rather then access the resources where they can get immediate results. Although we try and encourage them to take land, they do choose financial compensation. I think for me the other issue which is important is that the role of the department is broader than just restitution, which is land redistribution. And therefore, in the context of the Restitution Act, if the claimants opt to financial compensation, because it's about restorative justice, it is their right to do so, but that the department must continue with its mandate of land redistribution broadly so that restitution is not seen as the key focus for transformation on the land question. But I just wanted to say that the formal structure that is set up to work on the districts for the claimants is the working group. I mean, it's the reference group. It's the reference group that is the one that was appointed at the ICC, the Cape Town Convention Centre, where the claimants voted and the structures was elected formally. So that's the structure we interact with formally. This is the structure that then refers to where the bi-weekly meetings, and that has to report to the political heads that are there. But the trust is still a structure that is there, although it is not perceived as a representative structure by all of the claimants. You will hear that there's an issue of 100,000 or 200,000. There was a 200,000 which the trust requested from each claimant when they were doing the development of phase one and phase two. And so some of the claimants are disgruntled about that and they're wanting that 200,000 back. And then you've got the working group, which is the community group that they have created on their own, which is the one that is now taking us to court. And you also have the co-signing group. So you've got a myriad of structures. They're competing and representing different perspectives, and that also contributes to some of the delays, including the issue of the eviction that we ended up having to deal with. I think I'll leave it at that, and then I'll take additional questions.
There is a question that is being answered, and the brother indicated that you
were answered, and then the brother. Yes, Chairperson, just with regards to the Commissioner's office. The question I asked on slide number 5 was the approved budget for District 6 was 333 million, and then the remaining funding for restitution of phase 3 was 153 million. Now, I presume you've paid Fikile some of that money from the 153. Is that the only money available for redevelopment of District 6? If for the 108 units and whatever units they become, because based on your numbers, there's still 1,000 units that needs to be built. And where is that money going to come from, and when it's going to be done? Thanks.
Maybe if I can ask before I give you a chance, members.
to find out the whole business plan. You do have that number that says you want the money, and is the allocation of that money being given to those ones who opt for the money? Because I tend to think that that is a process that was quicker than any other one. And then all these groups that you are talking about, is the groups that are coming from the 1,200 and more. And after all this time, the houses that are being built is how many? 139 that is allocated, the units that are being allocated after how many years, since 2006 to 2018, is 139 houses. And then the money that you is still remaining is, like the members indicated, that is it going to be enough money of 300 or something? But the initial pledge was 700 million. What made it to change to be only 300,000 plus from the 700 million that I see that it was the business plan has talked about 700 million that was pledged? And the other question it will be on the issue of all you indicated about the social housing, the old age, the older ones that you're saying they are staying in the old age facilities. Because to me, if it's a land restitution, you have to give the ownership. Now, in that old age facilities, are they owning those facilities or those rooms that they are staying, the houses that are staying in the old age? Are their families or their descendants in a way going to benefit one way or another with renting those facilities? How is it going to work? And then who's the key person who's taking the decision that my grandmother is a land claimant and then now she's 94, she's going to go to the old age. That means the family legacy of the District 6 is being moved to that. There's no way that another person can go in. There's a little bit of confusion to me, maybe if I can get the answer of how do you go about to reinstate, to correct that, while it takes the older person to put in the social housing of the old age home. Remember, you still have questions? How many? Okay, let me give the department to answer because of we have... Okay, just for the recap, if you can tell them which question they didn't answer. And
again,
before I forget, remember the... Okay. Half past 10, the members of the standing committee of the transport, they are leaving half past 10.
Yeah.
So note that whilst you continue with your questions that are too many. Yeah, they must still answer. Give me a chance to breathe and out, in and out so that I can talk to you. The other issue of member that was asking, I think the commissioner just answered because the member was asking about who are the people that were here. You were not even here. So it was a standing committee. The district is people that were here, member, you are the one who was here. Are the people that saw the agenda and they came to listen, what is it that is being talked about District 6. They are the ones who wanted the answers, to hear what will answers be, looking at the agenda that was there. So we don't know which groups were they coming from. They were not invited group. It was the random District 6 claimants coming to just listen to the standing committee. So it is it. Okay. Member? There's a technicality that we have, and I know you are my favorite members. I'm not going to take any other questions. The department is going to answer the questions that we have asked. We've got the city that still have to talk to us. So no more questions about District 6. We can do the follow-up. I think they're not going anywhere. The department is still there for forever. So they can come back if there are other things that are still, or we can send the questions
in writing, they can read them. They can.
Can I request that can the department please answer? Not if they don't want to answer now.
Yeah.
I've realized that they don't respond on anything around FIKI. I don't know why it is about protest.
No, they are going to answer it now.
Because why are they running away from answering about FIKI? The specific question that I've asked.
Remember?
And if they don't answer now, I don't know when they will answer.
No, remember, I'm going to protect them because we're still with the commission now. I'm giving them chance to answer. That is why I'm blocking anything that you have to do because every question that are remaining is around Figile. So, Figile, over to your department.
Thank you very much, Chair. What we were focusing on initially was just the basic background on the commission and the claims. Then Calvin will then respond to the development aspects, including the Figile issue. Safe to say that the question of the full business plan is one that has been contested for a long time. Chair, you are referring to $700 million, which was a commitment which was made by the president when he went to District 6. The amount which is outstanding, the 153, is allocation from the commission's perspective, according to what we are required by law to make available for the claimants, the old order claimants only. However, the minister, in terms of Section 42C of the Restitution Act, has a discretion to allocate development resources. So that's why the partnership between the commission and the department for the sustainability of the project. But what we are clear to say to the claimant community is that it can't be a wish list of everything because the state can only provide so much and no more. And so those are some of the hurdles.
From 700 million to 3, that means not 700 to
3. No. We're not even taking into consideration the 700. We are the amount that we refer to is our money from the commission's perspective based on the allocation that we would usually have in any claim that we deal with. But that's why I said, but the minister has a discretion to provide additional, but we also have to consider the president's pledge. And we already have 139 houses built and 108 in process. But it's a difficult claim, Chair. And we are hoping that we will be able to provide resources for all of the claimant community, claimants. But we will be guided by the politicians on that specifically.
Chair, I believe Jimmy will answer questions of Akira. I'll come back to questions regarding the holistic plan and the plans for the future phases of the remaining houses and how that allocation and planning process is happening. But let's just get to the Figile issue.
Can we do a commitment before you continue? Can we do a commitment? Because I feel there's no way that we can answer all the questions satisfactorily to the members. So you're going to answer the questions, but this is going to be part one. We will invite you again to come and interact with the members to continue about some of them. Because I tend to feel that even if you can ask the questions on paper, it won't be the same as you interact to get some of the answers. Can we have a commitment about that, members? Can we agree on that? Okay.
We live here, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Okay, maybe the first thing to say is that there's an interim closeout report on District 6, which will answer a lot of questions that have been raised, and I am willing to submit it so that everybody has insight into the document. That deals with delays, why there were delays, how we dealt with the delays, what some of the challenges were, But also in here is the financial challenges, as well as the way forward as to how to deal with Fukile or other processes from now. So it's all in here. I'll give that to yourself and then take further. Why is the contract not completed? I think normally when you do an evaluation of tenders, one tend to look at what is the best option on the table from a paper exercise. But that's not always what happens on the ground. Or most of the times, in practical cases, you find out that what's on paper is not as good as what you expected. Fakile, at the point when we appointed Fakile, there was all the right things done. There's a guarantee that's been put in place. There's references in terms of other contracts that's been completed, and everything was fine. I think one of the problems in this whole process of government is that we ask for guarantees and bank guarantees at the moment when you award the tender. But you don't have control on what happens after the award. And that is one of the problems that happened with Fakile. Fakile was financially sound when we appointed them. But they got five other large contracts with government. And when I say government, I also mean local government, like Tswane municipality, which drained their resources. At the later stage, we were the only contract and project that was still progressing. The other four sites were standing still due to financial constraints. The banks wouldn't help them. In fact, they were looking at somebody to invest in the company to deal with some of their financial constraints, which they couldn't get. So mostly it's a financial issue here, and I think they've overcommitted themselves to projects. I mean, if something is there to be done, let us take it. And I think that was their biggest mistake in this whole process. What have we done when we saw that Fakile is cash-strapped and struggling? Initially, we didn't think they were cash-strapped. We thought that they are a Durban-based company. They're trying to find their feet in Cape Town, which are quite difficult. So using local subcontractors, and if you have a company in Durban, finding the right subcontractors is fairly difficult. And we've tried to assist them through the consultants. And there was even a technical agreement between Fakile and WHPO, where WHPO came in and provided them with technical advice and even had staff on site to assist them to deal with some of the technicalities on site. So being a BEE company, I think there were a lot of pressure to support them as far as we can. Now the question was raised, why did we not terminate earlier? I think if we terminated earlier, the question could have been raised, why did you terminate so early? It is quite a difficult process to decide when to terminate. Rules of thumb normally are that when the contractor cannot pay his subcontractors, then he's in financial problems. And that's the point where we terminated the contract. When the subcontractor said to us, we didn't receive our last payments. We were aware that they were struggling, but we were trying to support them to finish the contract. And it's not only for BEE reasons or for supporting the contractor technically, etc., but it's also for the reasons as to what happens if we do terminate, the consequences of termination. The consequences of termination, a big contract like this, is dire. Firstly, you have to get somebody else to come and finish the work. The whole question about latent defects afterwards, whose responsibility is it? Is it Fakile's or the guy that actually took the job afterwards? It could become a legal matter eventually. There's the whole question of professional indemnity if somebody else takes over, which is a problematic area. The whole question of guarantees. Who guarantees work if the foundations and the substructures has been done by somebody else? So the last resort is termination, believe me. You cannot terminate something until you know it's dead. And we try to support Fakile up to the point where we could see that this is not going to work. for us. Financially, we have spent 51% of money and we are on 48% work done. So we haven't over, sorry, the other way around. We had 51% work completed, we're on 48% spent. So we a few percentage underspent. We're busy looking at the file, looking at the work that has been completed to see whether there are further work that, that we should condemn, which could bring the amount of work completed down a little bit. But I think we're very close to paying what we should be paying. It's balancing. The second thing is we've called up the guarantee of 16 million, which is in our hands. That could make up for the deficit if we appoint somebody else to do the work. And then, of course, during the process, they were delayed a lot. And the delays were not only caused by themselves. There were cable that run through the site that we had to move that had a certain amount of days, 62 days, I can't remember exactly, but a certain amount of days. There were weather issues, there were strikes, there were various other reasons for delays. But except for that, they were slow on the project. I mean, they didn't have adequate staff. WBHO, as I've already indicated, were trying to amend that, which we couldn't do. But let me go back. I'm interrupting myself. I think the point is that there's enough funding, I believe, to cover probable costs for additional work that is now to be done. Because they were slow, there were also penalties imposed, so the amount that's paid is actually minus penalties, and that's why we get to the amount of 48% paid and 51% complete. There are various other questions. I think the steps to be taken now is that one of the strategies that we want to follow now, it's supposed to be immediate, is to go back to the original tender documents and to look at the second most favorable tender or tenderer bidder and see if we can find a negotiated way of them taking over the contract and proceed with their base price with escalation. We need to deal with Treasury around that. It's not something the department can decide on. But we are busy doing a submission to Treasury around that. That would cut out the whole supply chain processes because I think the supply chain processes are going to be very difficult. As I've already said, you have to indicate what is the remaining amount of work. Now, if you look at the site as it is now, it's closed, but the all the equipment has been removed from site. So for a new contractor or new potential contractor, a bidder to come on site and give us a price will almost be impossible. The site is not safe at this point. So we need to make the site safe. And to make the site safe is going to cost us quite a few rand. I think that's more or less what I want to say to you. The most important part is that asking new tenders is not going to be the viable way in our view, and we will be approaching Treasury around that.
Thank you. I think we are going to continue because there's a lot of questions that I feel the members would want to ask about the issue, but the sad part about the whole thing is it seems like more money was allocated to Fiji the more than to the claimants itself for them to can benefit. It's like a blank check to Fiji. One thing I don't understand is, Chair, why would you appoint the construction company from Durban while you have the local companies around here that can be simple to monitor and see if they are really going to make it or not? It's one of those things that we always say that before you move away, check if you do have the service providers locally so that it becomes simple for you to monitor everything. But that is the conversation that we have when we meet them. And I think the sooner the better if maybe the department can be available again
next available meeting, we'll communicate with you so that we take it from where we left off. There's a lot of questions. Members, do you want to say something, Emma?
I think that's the question you want to
ask. Yeah, he wants to answer, but
no, we're still waiting for other questions to be answered.
Yeah, we are going to the next meeting. I think it's going to be the 21st of August. Can you secure it for me? Check if you'll be available for me to respond the 21st of August. And there are other questions?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to follow up some of the other issues maybe Jimmy didn't speak to that I think also was raised regarding Fikile's appointment. And the issue of appointing somebody from Durban also will be addressed in that. There was a lot of interest from the representation of the claimant community regarding this tender. We wanted to make it as transparent as possible. It was not going to be any just the department doing this tender. So all aspects of this tender was done in the most transparent way we've ever done a tender in this department. We also requested special assistance from the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer at National Treasury to participate in this treasury, in this tender, because we foresaw that there was a lot of public interest in it and we didn't want negative perceptions regarding the outcome. So we were very careful about that and the entire process is documented. So whatever perceptions there may be, we can address that. The Chief Procurement Officer suggested that we do a two-envelope system on this, that we have a system that ensures that we get the best possible quality contractor. And I think one of our issues was, you know, we're putting out a tender and we don't want to get somebody who's not going to be able to do the work. It's sad that we ended up that way. But at the time of appointment, Fikile were the largest black-owned construction company in the country. They still are. They didn't have the financial issues that they have today at that time. In fact, they were one of the better companies. And when you're talking 9GP, you're talking companies like WBHO, GH, TBK was second. Those order of companies. When you're doing things of that magnitude, you can't specify that the company has to be from Cape Town. Because WBHO may have a footprint in Cape Town, Sandton, Durban, everywhere. But what you can ensure, and what we did ensure, is that the largest portion of subcontracting work that we could specify in the tender be allocated to local contractors. We also have to specify that they be from the claimant community. This was an agreement that the claimants requested, that as many of the people from the claimant community that could be employed in this construction process be accommodated. We have that in our tender. Some of the issues that Fikile claimed was a contributing factor in the delays and quality was because of the inclusion of these subcontractors who they claimed were substandard. And that was something that we had to negotiate with them, but it did have an impact. So I just wanted to fill in some gaps regarding some of those sort of perceptions about how they were appointed and the nature of their appointment.
Thank you very much. I think we will continue because and the HOD is here for him, Mr. Kumasi. He knows we talk a lot about the issue of the subcontractors that it doesn't they are not immune to be vetted if they can really give the services. So the lack of the accountability, I don't know, from the Department of who didn't check that the project as it was going on, what is happening there, that they were monitoring, or how does it work? There is somewhere, somehow, something went wrong, and it can't be for the construction company only. I think from the department also, a certain percentage played a role for it, for Fikile to fail the department and fail the District 6 committee. I think we, members, I think we are going to stop so that we can have time with the city. But from the department, thank you very much for your interaction. And I think it won't be the last time. And one thing that is important is like on the presentation, we said that the three spheres of government are going to be involved to make sure that this project really concludes, so that the district's community, because at the end, the district's community is the ones that have to really have joy of having that land restitution dealt with. The unfortunate part of it is the more it delays, the more groupings we are going to get, and it's not going to end, because a 20-year-old comes with a new ideas, and we're still negotiating with the 84-year-old. There's different ideologies, so it's going to be as difficult as it goes, but eventually something has to happen, and it has to happen very soon. No. If I give you one more question, I know member David is going to say that outstanding ones, just note them. When we meet on the 21st of August, I try to give you confidence that the 21st of August we'll meet with the department and then we'll continue. And especially we have to behave, because member Joseph today has honored us with the experience.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, I just wanted to say thank you very much for the opportunity, and perhaps to just request if some of the questions can be put in writing, so that perhaps we'll make sure that we're prepared, and maybe we're able to send documents in advance.
Definitely, that is going to happen. We are going to send you all the questions as we come, and we interact. It becomes simpler to interact with the information already that will be in front of us, because I don't think we had an idea of how huge is the problem. We thought that it will be as simple as can get, that we get the 84-year-old having the house, only to find that you have too many 84-year-olds. So we will interact on the 21st. But thank you very much. We really appreciate your coming to us today. And I know if you go out through the door, throughout the passage at the end, we're going to have coffee and something to eat, and then you can go after that. We don't have wasteful expenditures in this legislature, so make sure you drink coffee, otherwise I'm in trouble with the wasteful expenditure. Thank you very much. Thank you, Master.